Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Alpharetta, Georgia, it's time for Alpharetta Business Radio, spotlighting the area's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Good morning, everyone. In spite of having the people on 400 meeting by accident, we have made it into the studio today, and we're delighted to have you with us. In studio with us today, we have three great people you'll want to know about. One of them will feed you, one of them will feed your mind, and the other one will keep what you've learned secure. So our first guest will be Stephanie Howard. She is a catering manager with McAllister's Deli. Our second guest will be Bill Abrams with ABC US, which has security solutions for mobile workers. And you'll want to hear all about that, particularly with all the privacy and Chinese hacking and things that have been plaguing us lately, and the great embarrassments that some very large corporations have had as their data goes out the door unexpectedly. And finally, we have Steve Miller, who is a franchisee coach with the Entrepreneur Source. He will tell you how they work with businesses to help them perform better and make more money sooner. So let's get started with you, Stephanie. Tell us about the McAllister's Deli, and how did you get in the deli business?
Well, I've always been in the restaurant business, but I came onto McAllister's because I liked the product, really good product, and they were interested in starting their catering business. They used to just answer the phone and take a catering order, and now what they like to do is actively go out there and build relationships and make new clients and show the food industry and the business world that we are part of catering now.
So you said you were in the restaurant business. Tell us about your history in the restaurant business.
I have been in the good, bad, and the ugly. I've been in fine dining all the way down to the finest dive bars on the beaches of Jacksonville. And I put myself through school, got a business degree, and for some reason decided I just couldn't get enough. So I went to management and started managing restaurants.
Was that the dive bar or the restaurant side?
The restaurant side. I did bar for bar. I managed bars, but not necessarily as seedy as where I got my beginnings from.
I see. So, you've been in this how long?
Since I was 15.
Since 15. So that's been about 3 years, right?
Absolutely. You're correct, sir. I have a very big resume for my 3 years.
Tell us what makes McAllister's different than the other choices that are out there. What is it about McAllister's that's special?
Well, McAllister's now offers breakfast, lunch, and dinner options for catering, which traditionally normal delis do not do. So some of our competition can't hit all the day parts that we can. And we are a lower price range than some of the other Atlanta caterers out there. So I can do a wedding and I can do banquets and business functions and things like that for a lot less money than some of the other companies that have the high overhead.
McAllister's is a physical location or are you strictly catering?
Yes, sir. No, we have physical locations. We have over 300 stores in the United States. My district, I have 7 in my area, both in Alabama and Georgia. And the ones that we should talk about are the ones in my local metro Atlanta area, which is in Roswell off of Holcomb Bridge, Lawrenceville off of Old Peachtree, and I also have one in Kennesaw, close to Kennesaw State University.
Wow. So is it a franchise or is it something that you're involved in?
I work for the corporation, but they do have franchise. About two-thirds of our company is franchise and the other is corporation.
What do you do, weddings and corporate events and things like that?
I do. I have an extensive special events and catering background, so I have the ability to dress up some sandwiches or some of the new dinner items and make them super fancy. And I've done weddings. I've done business functions. I've fed up to 300. We've gone down. We also have Turner Studios downtown, so I field Shaquille O'Neal all the time when they're in their commenting about the ball games and things.
Wow. So there's an endorsement.
Yes, we have to give him 2 grilled chicken Caesar salads because Shaq likes to eat. I put them all in an extra large bowl for him so he doesn't.
Yeah, feel... I mean, what size wash tub does that come in?
He's a very tall man. He makes me very short.
Well, I guess you don't find very many short basketball players.
No, not many.
Yeah. So in terms of what's hot, what are people ordering? What's the most popular things today?
Well, I've started to really cater and market to the dinner entrees, a lot of the more comfort foods that McAllister's is not traditionally known for. So I've got an Italian chicken, and I can do a kind of Italian-themed with Caesar salad and garlic bread and things like that to really put together a nice meal. I've got a Southwestern chicken that is to die for. It's got barbecue and bacon and onions and scallions, and it's chipotle barbecue sauce. It's so, so good.
Oh, wow. I think I'm just going to look at the menu and drool for a moment.
I know. It does make you do that.
Yeah, it's a terrific menu. And, you know, if people want to find your locations, how do they do that?
We're on the website, www.mcallistersdeli.com. You can look us up there. There's online ordering available also. And you just put in your zip code, and it will tell you the store's locus convenient to you. Franchise and corporation.
So if I have an event as a corporation, I have a big meeting, and I want to have something catered in that's better than the pretzels and stuff out of the vending machine, what kind of cost range are these things?
I work with all different types of budgets. So there's amazing things that you can do. My product is not that expensive. It's really very conservative in price comparatively. So I've been able to do meals well under $15 a head.
Wow. And that's a complete, you know, like a lunch or
a complete lunch, a complete dinner.
Wow. That's really a pretty good deal today, isn't it?
It's an excellent deal. And for a little extra, we don't mind coming in to do the cleanup and the setup and the service if you want to go a little bit extra. We're very flexible. We want to make your event perfect.
What's McAllister's known for?
McAllister's is known for their sandwiches, their salads, and their spuds. They have a unique product called the Spud Bar that most of the delis don't have, and it's basically a build-your-own baked potato. So you get piping hot, fluffed-up already baked potatoes and all the garnishes you could want to add onto it. So bacon, turkey, cheese, it's all on the side, so everybody gets to make their own. And that one is really, really fun and kind of breaks the variety. And, you know, everybody gets a sandwich and chips and salad. So this is something hot, something unique that only McAllister's offers.
Wow. Quite a wide variety. I'm holding the menu, and it's actually quite a few pages, and it's, you know, small print, and big pictures, and really tasty looking things.
Forget our sweet tea. Now that's what they built their entire brand on, is their signature sweet tea, and we sell it. We do a community event every year called Free Tea Day, where thousands and thousands and thousands of people line up and come just to get a glass of our tea. We don't give it away for free every day, only once a year, so everybody can enjoy this. But the whole brand was built on our sweet tea.
Gosh, you know, sort of reminds me of some people I know up in Dawsonville that sell things in jugs.
It's not quite that kind of jug. Still is good, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it looks great. The, you know, famous sweet tea. When somebody puts that on, you know, their label, you know this is going to be good.
They stand by it. They have an exact recipe that every single store follows without fail. It's known for the tea. We cherish our tea. We protect that.
Fantastic. So if I'm in the market for a catered lunch, dinner, bar mitzvah, whatever it is, how do I get in touch with you?
You just reached me by email at showard@mcallistersdeli.com.
And phone number?
My phone number is 770-862-5655. That's my local number.
Fantastic. And you remembered it. I have people that frantically are waving at me saying, you know, can you give me my card? I can't remember my number.
I didn't even think to look on my card.
It's a lot of fun. Well, it's great having you in this morning, Stephanie. Can you remain for our other guests?
I would love to remain. Thank you for having me, Chris.
Great. Well, Bill, you know, welcome to Radio X. It's really great to have you here. You know, you're in the security business.
Yes.
Yeah, up into the mic, please.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
We have to have our guest talk in the mic. Be sure and talk right into it there.
Okay.
Point it up a bit too. Turn it that way. Bring it towards me and then turn it towards you. Other way. There you go. That's the direction you wanted pointed.
Okay, gotcha.
We're having you know, directions on microphone use here.
Yeah, there you go.
Live on the air. How to use a microphone.
101. Okay.
Yeah. Be sure it's in front of your mouth. It won't work off to the side.
Okay.
You have to talk into it, not beside it. Otherwise, it goes just like that.
Okay. How's that?
Great. That's fantastic. Well, Bill, in the security business, what are the problems that people are facing today?
Most of the people today are traveling, and they are mobile. They are going from home to work, and back home again, and so forth. We find that many people are using what they call these flash drives. They're small. They plug into the USB port, and you back your products up and your information up, and then you put it in your pocket, and you take off either going back to the office or going home. What is happening is that these are getting lost, and when they get lost, it becomes a real problem for not only the person, but for the company they work for. What we've done is, I'll tell you a little bit about how this may work. You remember the TV series Mission Impossible, where Peter Graves goes to the clandestine site location to hear details about a secret mission. And on a pre-recorded device, and after the message is given, he is told the tape will self-destruct in 5 seconds. Hi, this is Bill Abrams, ABC US. Every day across the USA, employees of corporations are toting around their company laptops. And every day, these companies get lost, or these computers get lost or stolen, and so forth. And the detailed company information is at risk. I provide a device for these laptops that will cause the laptop's data to self-destruct, so to speak, in the event that someone tries to use a lost computer to access company data. So basically what we've done is the devices have a thing in there where when you plug them in, they go back and they connect to the administrator's computer system. And when those get lost, the person who has it doesn't log back in. So there's like, I don't want to get too much detail, but there's a policy set. So you have to log in maybe once a week or every other day, however it's set, to make sure you are you. If you don't log in, then that administrator assumes that that device is lost. So the next time the person logs in, he sends out a code, and it basically, we call it sort of self-destruct, but what it does, it rewrites the data, so it becomes useless.
Yeah. Is it encrypted on the device itself,
yes,
too?
Yes. The products that I work with are all already encrypted. So as soon as you put the key into the your computer or whatever, it's automatically encrypting that information.
Yeah. Whatever is on the drive.
Yeah. Right. So that encryption basically makes it unreadable.
Mm-hmm. Now tell me... if I have a laptop and I have sensitive data on it, like, say, Health and Human Services that, you know, lost a big one that was, you know, quite, you know, made the headlines here not too long ago, how could you protect something like that from loss and misuse?
We have a program that you actually install onto that laptop, and everything on that laptop that you put in there is encrypted, and that's becoming very popular. So that it works basically the same way as the other one does. Somebody steals that computer, they try to go in, and with the wrong password, several attempts, it will go back and it should erase that data so that there's nothing left on the laptop.
Is there any way for somebody to get around? Let me ask the question, does it encrypt that drive as well?
Yeah, that's what it's doing. Yeah. It's encrypting the hard drive.
Yeah, right. So even if someone were to remove it and try to read it, if you were anybody short of, you know, a national government, what would be your odds of being able to crack it?
Slim. You can't. There's a lot of different things that are out there. When I first got into this part of the business, I took a flash drive over to a large bottling company in downtown Atlanta. And the second one we went to was Georgia Tech, and of course they wanted to drop the product into liquid nitrogen to see what would happen. And we said, yeah, go ahead and drop it in there and put your hand in there and pull it out and see if it's cold. The reason for that is there's some tricks that you can do. Mm-hmm. Is basically you can freeze the memory on some of these devices. Mm-hmm. And once you freeze that memory, there's a way to pull the data back up. Some of the products that I work with in that mobile market have what they call a crypto chip in it. And that crypto chip is where everything's how the passwords are given out and so forth. And your password is mostly what they try to do is try to, you can't basically get into these devices because of that crypto chip is taken care of. Once that device has been tampered with, it goes out and sends a signal and basically destroys everything.
Hmm. So it really does secure your data, yeah. You know, mm-hmm. And, you know, so that it, for the average person, maybe a national government, an NSA or somebody mm-hmm. could get through all the protocols that protect the data. But short of that, I mean, the average hacker doesn't have a chance.
Well, the first product that I worked with when I first got into the mobile product, the company was actually backed by Homeland Security. And so you would figure that they tried everything possible to break into those devices. So they do all the tricks.
Maybe they had different people in it, the screeners.
Yeah. So it gets, what's another good thing about the flash drive is that the good ones, not the ones you buy for $10 or $15, but the good ones, is you can take the data, you can put it in an envelope, mail it to somebody, call them up and say, here's the password. And if they don't get it, you don't care. They can't get in anyway.
Mm. So it's a very secure way to send sensitive data.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And if you have inventions, patents, mm-hmm. things that you're working on, formulas that are, the formula to Coke, mm-hmm. You could entrust it to one of these devices, perhaps, mm-hmm. along with a Brinks truck, perhaps.
Right.
And ship it securely.
Right.
So... sounds like something that the Department of Defense and other federal agencies right. would find very, very popular. Is that in wide use in the government?
Yes, one of the products that I've been working with for the last 4 or 5 years is the large government agency, and right now I've got close to 30,000 of these devices throughout the United States.
Gosh.
And they seem to like them. They keep coming back for more, so. Yeah. It seems to be working yeah. quite
now,
well.
Now, I'm a small company. Mm-hmm. I've got, 10 or 12 people, but I have some really sensitive data and things I'm working on.
Mm-hmm.
Is this a product I can afford?
Yeah. I mean, they're...
maybe the question is, can I afford not to have it?
Exactly. So, if you're doing protecting intellectual property and you're a small law firm or whatever, you pick up a couple of these things and you put your data on it, and then you feel better because you know that if I lose it on the way home, something happens, I don't have to worry about it. People aren't going to get into that data. On the other hands, with the smaller ones, you lose it, you plug it in, and you can sit there and piddle with it, and, hey, here's everything I need to know.
Hmm. Now, if I were a doctor, particularly with HSA mm-hmm. and all the security, things that are now being passed by Congress to protect mm-hmm. Health data, mm-hmm. Is this something for a medical
right.
office?
Yes. These are all encrypted 256. They call it 256 AES encryption. It's always on. So, yeah, it's HIPAA certified. So forth.
So it can potentially save you millions of dollars right. by having something mm-hmm. like this if you handle sensitive data at all.
Right.
So, Bill, how do people get in touch with you?
Well, I have my website, which is being rebuilt right now. We should have the new website up probably by end of next week at the latest. But basically, my email address is B as in boy, Abrams. A, B as in boy again, R-O-M-S at abcusinc.com.
abcusinc.com.
Correct.
And your phone number?
It's 770-448-5667.
So if you want to be secure, give Bill a call and... Your data will remain safe, and you won't find yourself with a TV camera poked in your face and someone asking you, well, why did you give away all that personal data?
There you go.
Always embarrassing. Can you wait for our last guest here?
Sure.
Well, Steve, we have Steve Miller with Entrepreneur's Source. Welcome, Bill. Welcome, Steve. Tell us what the Entrepreneur's Source is and what you do.
Well, Chris, thanks for having me on the air this morning. The Entrepreneur Source is an organization that represents about 300 businesses in our portfolio. The majority of them are franchise opportunities. However, there are a number that I would refer to as a business in a box. And I work with clients who are frequently in transition in their careers. It may be people who are in our season of life, Chris, they're in their 40s and 50s that have been displaced from business as a result of downsizings or for whatever reason. And it's difficult for older workers in this season of life to get back into a position. So I come alongside them as a plan B to explore business opportunities as an option.
Wow. Now, what does an entrepreneur source franchisee do?
Well, I coach. There are some organizations that work in this space that are referred to as franchise brokers. That's not my role. I really don't sell. I come alongside a client, make the determination, does it make sense for an individual to look at a business, and if it makes sense, which opportunities may be the best fit for them.
So let's just say I'm one of the corporate refugees who has been displaced by merger acquisition or just the economy, and I have an executive background. You're the person that if I were to meet you, you could introduce me to what the franchise is, what it does, and then get them into the franchise?
Exactly. Maybe I can just tell you a little bit about my story and how I got to where I am. I came up through the healthcare sector. I was with Baxter Travonol back in the early to mid-80s. And there was someone I had a run in terms of an issue of integrity, so I resigned, moved to Atlanta, and joined Adolf Coors Company. They had a healthcare division, believe it or not, the brewer. And I was a territory rep, was promoted quickly to national sales manager, moved to Golden, Colorado, 29 years old, sitting in on board meetings with the Coors family, Bill, Joe, Jeff, and Pete. And then after
I'll drink to that.
Yeah, I would. After one of those meetings, they made the decision to sell the non-brewing divisions of the company, including healthcare, biotech, and us, or in ceramics. So I was out of a job for the second time in 3 years. Came to Atlanta, worked with Norrell Healthcare, which is Guy Milner's company here in Atlanta. He sold that a few years ago. I was promoted four times in 5 years with Norrell. I was started out in franchise development, then an operations position in Atlanta, then a regional operations position, then a director of franchise development. And guess what happened in 1992? They sold the division. And for this, even though I'd been promoted.
So you're the reason all these acquisitions occur.
Yes, and I was a pioneer in this outsourcing. This happened in the late 80s and 90s. So I started my first business up in 92. It was a medical product distribution company. I sold it to a publicly traded company in 2000. And I actually bought a franchise, Chris, in 2003. And I really like franchises. So I ran that for 7 years and sold that to a business partner about 3 years ago. So now I'm with the Entrepreneur Source.
And entrepreneurship really has two sides, as I understand it. There's the franchise side that, you know, that help people find a franchise that's right for them.
Correct.
And the other side of it is really kind of a coaching thing, isn't it?
Exactly. And I don't do the coaching. I am too impatient to do coaching. I've coached a couple friends in their own businesses, and my frustration is I can see pretty clearly what needs to be done, but it's difficult to convince them that those things need to be implemented.
Can you give our listeners a sample of the kinds of opportunities that you have that might be of interest to, let's take two classes of people. One of them are those who have been outsourced or outplaced or in some career transition. The other one are the people that have jobs but want to hedge their bets and have a second source of income perhaps they can develop on the side. Can you give us some examples of the kind of things that you could help people with in that
absolutely.
Regard?
Absolutely. Sure, Chris. For the first, the criteria that I use for locating a business for them is I try to find businesses that are doing well in a down economy. And keep in mind, we represent about 300 companies. So I don't think the economy is going to come roaring back anytime soon. As much as possible, I try to locate home-based businesses. It just keeps the overhead much lower and fewer employees. I try to show businesses that have six-figure income potential because why go into a business if you can't make a six-figure income out of it? Businesses that build equity, businesses that are lifestyle businesses where you have a life outside of business where you're not so tied down to it constantly. And then the investment range of the businesses that I typically show are somewhere in the $50,000 to $150,000 range. That's a sweet spot.
Yeah. Is there something that an executive or person who is working now could start and run on the side that they can be involved in that would turn into a reasonable long-term income that they could sell at some point in the future?
Absolutely. There are several of those opportunities. A couple of those would be, for example, we represent a number of companies that do hairstyling, like a Great Clips or Sport Clips, something like that. Those are great opportunities for someone who I would refer to as a passive investment business. There are a lot of others, some in the healthcare industry, some in personnel, some of the services businesses. So there are probably close to 100 different opportunities in that space.
Are there psychological profiles of people that were more likely to be good franchisees?
That's another great question. I advise advise clients on this frequently. In my first business, it was independent, and it was tough because there was no one else to turn to. The profile of a good franchisee would be someone who can follow the rules, someone who is able to follow a system. Someone like Richard Branson or an extreme entrepreneur would go crazy in a franchise opportunity. But if there are a lot of people who may not be, quote, entrepreneurial, but they'd like to operate a small business, so a franchise is a very attractive option for them. Because in a franchise, what I see is really as having owned now, too, because the Entrepreneur Source itself is a franchise, the advantages that I see to them is, number one, the brand is established. It includes the website, the logo, the collateral material. Number two, the cookbooks, if you will. I don't know about you, Chris, but if I go to the kitchen and I'm asked to go prepare a meal, maybe Stephanie's better at this than I am, but if I'm asked to go create a meal and I don't have a cookbook, I'm not going to succeed.
I don't need a cookbook. I just need to be able to find the buttons on the microwave.
Okay. Well, with the franchise, you receive a system to follow, and that's one of the other advantages, plus the personnel and support to train and support. And then lastly, what I think is one of the most underrated and misunderstood is the network of other owners. I can go to other owners, for example, another coach who's been very successful up in Chattanooga, and say, hey, Bruce, I've got a situation here. How would you handle it? I'm part of the club, if you will. I'm in the system. So we are very open about collaborating.
Who is it wrong for?
It's wrong for people who are undercapitalized. That's one of the biggest mistakes I think people make is they have a investment range in a business, and let's say it's close to all of their personal assets, but they don't have adequate working capital to be able to pay the rent, to live indoors, and to eat. And one of the main reasons businesses are fail is because they're undercapitalized. So for people who really can't afford a business, I would say that would be the number one. Number two would be people who are just completely adverse to risk. They'd like to have a paycheck. They like to have the, quote, security that I did not experience working for a corporation. But I think there's a false sense of security that they have a paycheck. That's something that you may or may not be able to retrieve or receive from the business for the first 6 months or so. So you have to have the ability to take the risk, to be able to weather that period until the startup is underway, and then hopefully it will be successful and it will take off.
Yep. You mentioned the risk that people in corporations take on that they don't realize.
Yes.
What are the differences? What's the disconnect between people's expectations of their career with a corporation today versus reality, based on your experience?
Sure. I run into this a lot. People who, I'm 55, as I mentioned, people who are in my generation had the expectation they would go to work for a corporation for 30 years, get their pension, get their gold watch, and retire. And we've really been in for a surprise, because that is not at all what happens. It's a very uncommon that I talk to a client who has been with a corporation for much longer than, say, 5 or 7 years. There are exceptions, but there are a lot of people who have been with the company. I've got a client in Dallas who's been with the company for 23 years. He really doesn't know his status. He hasn't had a raise in 3 years. He hasn't had a performance review in 2 years. He just doesn't know his status. So he does have a paycheck, but he's extremely dissatisfied in his position. So there's been a paradigm shift with our attitude about employment, that almost like the employer owes us the position, used to be the case. is pretty much hire by desire right now in terms of if they have a need for your services, they'll employ you. I think the attitude is you work more like an independent contractor than you really do as an employee, and you keep your options open. That's the wise way to approach it.
I think you would probably agree that the most addictive drug in America is not cocaine or crack, or meth, but is actually the two-week paycheck.
Yes.
Take it away and watch what happens to someone. The anxiety goes through the roof. They sweat. They can't sleep. Have you seen those people?
Oh, absolutely. And that is the case. But the reality is that I was reading a study here recently that 65% of employees are extremely or somewhat unsatisfied in their work. And that's two-thirds of workers are dissatisfied in their work. But they stay where they are. And it's so discouraging because when I set out on my own in 92, it is the most liberating feeling to be away from that and to really enjoy what you do. That's one of the things that I'm most satisfied that I've ever been in my career doing what I do now because I'm able to help people to really gain some satisfaction with what they're doing.
You've been an entrepreneur, Steve. When you went out on your own, did you feel like you were at sea all alone and just had the determination to make it work?
Failure was not an option. So, yes, I did feel that way. And what, quite frankly, I didn't know, Chris, in my first business nearly sank the business and is why I sold it. I was always involved in business development, sales management, kind of what Stephanie does in terms of developing business. The distribution company that we started grew at a breakneck pace. We were growing 30-60% a year, year over year for 8 years. And what I took my eye off the ball of, and what I really didn't understand, was the importance of the financial aspect of the business. To me, the accountants and the financial people were a nuisance. They got in the way of growth. And I did not surround myself with the appropriate individuals to guide me through that. So consequently, the company was leveraged to the hilt. We had sunk most of the money into furniture, fixtures, equipment, assets such as inventory and accounts receivables. And after 8 years, the best thing I could have done was lock the door, sell the inventory, collect the receivables, and go home. And fortunately, we found a business, as I mentioned, a publicly traded company that wanted us. They acquired it, and it was good to sell it. But I learned so much through that experience that I've now gained when I've started subsequent businesses.
How long did it take the large company that bought it to destroy it?
Yes, you knew the history somehow, but yes, you're right. It took about a year and a half. We were purchased, if you remember back in 2000, that was the dot-bomb era. And the company that acquired us had raised $45 million in capital on a business plan. And I stayed on board for a short time thereafter. The company then began to take the money from my former company to make their payroll, and the vendors that I was working with, I never completed a credit application with them, so I did it on a handshake, and I was not going to allow them to get stiffed. So I went ahead and informed them that just watch yourself in terms of how much credit you're extending and how long it goes. And then I also sent a letter to the board, and I knew I was going to get fired because of it, and I did get terminated because I did send a letter to the board informing them of that. Within 6 months, the company went bankrupt.
And that's a sad history of so many acquisitions, that the very things that made it great are the first things that the people that buy the company change.
That's exactly right.
It doesn't look like us. That's a syndrome, I call it.
Yes.
You make porcelain toilets, and I sell IT equipment.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it needs to look like porcelain toilets,
right?
And consequently, they tend to go out of business. Now, it sounds like this company that took this thing and off the edge of the cliff would have benefited a lot from business coaching.
Absolutely, they would have.
Yeah. What did you learn as an entrepreneur running your own business that you think a business coach could have helped you get past and exceed any expectation you had of success.
Yeah, they would have definitely been able to help me with understanding that revenue for the sake of revenue is not always good, that you have to make sure that that business is profitable, taking into consideration all the cost functions of the business. I would also say that just having someone that would be a sounding board, mm-hmm. someone that you could bounce ideas off and resonate ideas with instead of working individually would have been of huge benefit. And quite frankly, I wish someone had, this is for all you business coaches out there, I wish someone had really offered the services to come alongside, because quite frankly, I didn't know it even existed until I became one.
It's one of the best kept secrets out there, but it's really the finishing school for those entrepreneurs who want to succeed.
Yes.
You know, that you can learn two ways. You can learn from your own mistakes or you can learn from someone else's, and it's a lot cheaper to learn from the latter.
Absolutely. And I will say that the Entrepreneur Source has trained me as a business coach, although I don't do any of it. For the right opportunity, I might if it was interesting enough, but I can certainly refer anybody who's looking for that type of support just to a coach in the area, because there are other individuals who are with the Entrepreneur Source that do this.
Now, how many are you, do you have in the Atlanta area?
In Georgia, there are five, I believe, coaches in the state of Georgia.
Yeah. So it's not something that's just around the corner, but it's well worth seeking out.
Absolutely.
If you understand what those people do. And we've had a number of them on here. And if you understand what they can do for your business that will keep you from making some of the mistakes that most entrepreneurs make, not because they're dumb, not because they're stupid, simply because, hey, how do you learn?
And I would also say something else, Chris, in retrospect from your question. I think pride gets in the way. That one thinks that because they're running their own business that they don't need help. And I discovered the hard way that pride is a very bad thing. It really cost me my business, because I think if I had sought listened to the advice of my accountant, who at the time did do some advising, if I had been a little more responsive and receptive to what he was saying, I'd have been a lot better off. So put the pride in the back pocket and get on with it.
Yeah, you know, there's no pride in failure, and there's no pride in being stupid and not taking good advice from people that are experts in a field.
Exactly.
You know, it's just the opposite. I mean, you from experience, and I've been in and out of businesses too, that you're your own worst enemy.
Yes.
And if you can put that aside, you don't have this kind of ego investment of always having to be right, and nobody is. I mean, the last guy that did that died a couple of thousand years
right.
ago, I think.
Exactly.
We have this kind of mentality in the U.S. business world that you have to be the Lone Ranger. You have to be the guy that goes out and gets the bad guy.
And I think there are a lot of business owners who are – I was 32 when I started my first business. And I thought I knew a lot, and I didn't. And you and I have some gray hair now and some experience behind us, that if you can find, for the younger business owners, even those who are in tech companies and startups, find someone who can be a mentor, who can really guide and direct you from the school of hard knocks and experience, because we've got a lot of scars and a lot of experience of doing things the wrong way, haven't we, over the years?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I can, you know, I feel like Thomas Edison. I know 10,000 ways not to build a light bulb.
Yes. And we because of our scars, we can help navigate them through those rough waters.
Well, great. Steve, there are a number of other franchise brokers that are in the area. Right. What sets Entrepreneur Source apart from them?
That's a great question. I get that asked often. The first is that I'm not a broker. I'm a coach. So I, as I mentioned earlier, I really come alongside the client and determine if it's a good idea for them to be even looking at a business to begin with. And that entails a lot of information that I gather. I do a lot of interviewing. I usually spend at least a couple of hours with my client before we even get to the point where we're talking about options. We look at the financial situation. I do a DISC profile. I find out the family dynamics. Sometimes the spouses are not involved in the process, and they need to be very early on so that they know what's going on and they can either become comfortable with or not decide to move forward with the idea. So I would say the number one is that I'm not a broker, I'm a coach. I don't really sell, I advise. Number two, we at the Entrepreneur Source have been in business for the longest time. We've been for the longest in this space. We've been in business for 25 years. We have roughly 300 companies in our portfolio. Most of our competitors have a quarter to a third of that, if that number. So we have a lot more of options to present to our clients than what most of our other people that work in our space. And I would say just it boils down to the individual who is advising the client. I don't think there are many people who are better qualified than I am because of my experience of having run my own business and now have run two franchises. I owned one, as I mentioned, prior to this one. And I happen to like them. But, again, they're not for everyone. And if we feel like it's not the right fit, then we'll certainly sway away from those.
Yeah. I think there's a misconception that, well, you know, that some franchises, I suppose, would be guilty of this, that they, you know, that, you know, it's make the sale at any cost. But, right. In fact, a franchise, if you understand, the last thing they want is a failed franchisee, because that stays on their record for 5-7 years, doesn't it?
That's exactly right. The acquisition of a franchise is one of the most, I view, one of the most transparent transactions you can make, because the businesses, the franchise, sale of franchises is regulated by the Federal Trade Commission. The Federal Trade Commission requires the franchisors, and Stephanie knows this, I'm sure, to publish a franchise disclosure document, an FDD. The FDD contains information including the background and information of the owners of the business. It contains the financial information of the parent corporation. It has any litigation involving the franchisor. It lists the actual franchise agreement. And then the last section is a list of all the other franchise owners. This is the part you're referring to. It lists not just the present owners, the franchisees, but the ones who are no longer in the system. And if you have a franchisor who has a lot of failures, there's probably a reason for that. And the reason can be discovered by talking to the ones who are no longer franchisees, by looking at the FDD. Their names and phone numbers and addresses are in there, and they can be contacted. Now, what you will probably find in some cases, not all, but in some cases, when you talk to a failed franchisee, they're going to probably blame the majority of the blame on the franchisor. It's not always valid. People don't want to sometimes take responsibility. But if you see a trend where it's a frequent failure for the same reason and it's attributed to the franchisor, that's very revealing, and I would definitely take notice of that.
Yeah, if you talk to people, the truth will out.
It will. And that's one thing that I really try in many cases to slow my clients down. I had one in... I won't say the name of the town, but he had engaged with me to look for a business for his wife. Right after we started talking, he went to his corporate offices expecting to get a rave review, and he got fired. So he came back, and he's a high D, high I kind of a personality, and we then shifted gears, and he wanted to look at a business for himself instead of for his wife. So being who he was, one of these guys who's just driven, He was in the process. I had shown him about four opportunities, and he was, after about a week and a half, ready to sign. And I said, whoa, wait, back up. How many franchisees have you spoken with? And it was none. And I said, you need to do a lot more due diligence before I'm going to let you go forward with this. So he did do that. Fortunately, he did check the company he was most interested in. He did check out the franchisees. It was very well validated. And he did end up, but it was about a month after we had engaged, as opposed to a week and a half or so after he wanted to. So I really advise folks to, you know, slow it down, think about it, talk to your family, pray about it, and then pull the trigger on if you've done a lot of due diligence on it.
Now, that's the mark of a real professional in the business, isn't it?
I hope so.
Well, you sound like you're one, Bill. You know, if people want to get in touch with you, how do they do that?
You can contact me by email or phone, smiller@esourcecoach.com. Number's 404-787-5897. And I work with clients all over the country.
Great. Well, you know who to call if you're thinking about leaving corporate America, have already been left, and are now looking for, you know, your next great opportunity. It doesn't always have to be inside of a corporation. You know who to call. So, you know, thank you for being with us, Steve.
And thanks for having me, Chris.
Great. Well, Stephanie, great having you. I'm originally from Jacksonville, so when you said Jacksonville, my ears perked up.
Yeah. We'll talk off the air, see if you know.
Yeah, I understand
some
that.
Of my local
CD. I have to get that reaction all the time from people from Jacksonville. And Bill, thank you so much for being with us.
You're welcome.
Okay, that's our show for today, and tune in again the same time next Wednesday. Also, if you know companies who have a great story to tell, we'd love to have them on air. So send in your information to businessradiox.com, and we'll see about getting them on the air. So, you know, everybody have a great day, and watch that traffic out there. They're meeting by accident.
Thank you.